Welcome back, folks, to episode 64 of the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills and Self-Improvement Project podcast with me, your host, Dr. Armando Dominguez, PhD in health psychology, licensed professional counselor, and an adjunct professor at a local community college. And what we're going to be discussing today is going to be what I will term relaxing into pain. Now, this isn't something along the lines of anything sadistic where you cause pain to someone else, or masochistic, you let somebody cause you pain and you get pleasure out of. But rather, sometimes we have to endure pain. And pain is not always a physical thing having to do with damaging of our organism or person, but sometimes we have mental pain and emotional loads that are very uncomfortable that we can call painful. Maybe just the idea that we conceive of can be uncomfortable, and we may, in quotes, call it pain, when in actuality is an idea that we're uncomfortable with. But yet, if it's believable enough and if it's compelling enough, we can say that can cause us, in quotes, pain, internal pain. And that's where we're going to start the discussion with. But we're also going to discuss a couple of other things, some tools that have to do with how I conceive, how I think of pain, but also how I perceive pain, how I actually feel and experience pain, and the two differences there, and why often the words that we speak are a misnomer for what actual pain is versus what we're expecting to be painful, and how sometimes our belief can take us careening off into a direction that is not only uncomfortable, that we'll call painful, but also one that may take us out of our most rational and reasonable centered sense of self that may actually impact the decisions we make thereafter. So the obvious question is going to be, well, what is pain? Well, pain's a signal that tells our body, we're talking about the physical level right now, that there is something wrong, that something needs to change, because otherwise there may be injury. Sometimes pain can be very small, like stepping on a sticker, and that can be exquisite if it's particularly sharp, since the longest nerves and the largest, most sensitive nerves we have in the palmar surfaces of our hands and also the plantar surfaces of our feet. So therefore, something like a little pebble or something like that could become very uncomfortable if we step on it. So those are signals that tell us, ouch, something's wrong, don't keep doing this. And it helps our body protect itself from damage. And very much like that, over time, how we're reared and the beliefs that we take on and the expectations we start to acquire based on our experience tend to keep us away from things that cause us pain and discomfort. Some of us learn very quickly as a result of pain, a little faster than normal. And some even quip that experience is the greatest teacher, but it's also a very unforgiving and at times painful one. So keeping this in mind, in the general sense, physiologically, we have pain. So what's the difference between actual pain that our body experiences and we'll call that perceived pain by way of our senses, pressure sensors and heat sensors and all that good stuff, and also what's the difference between that and pain in our mind, pain in our thoughts that we call conceived pain, or not being able to entertain an idea, because maybe we may even feel a sense of physiological disgust. And disgust, mind you, is a reflex. It is something that science has found out is beyond our ability to control. It has something to do with the areas in our brain that has to do with our vomiting up things that are tainted or potentially poisonous to us that long time ago would have served a very, very important purpose in keeping us alive. I believe the structure within the lower brainstem is the area postrema that has to do with actual vomiting of what the body might take in that is toxic. And we have a version of that that occurs that we experience based on visual stimuli. That is not always olfactory. I smell something yucky and therefore I vomit. That can happen. But that's still a very physiological chemical signal that comes on. Tasting something, smelling something, or even seeing something disgusting. When we see something disgusting, now we're talking about meaning. We're talking about a social norm or abnormality or aberrance, or maybe an abomination if that's another term we like to throw out there. Notice how strong those words sound. They mean something beyond our typical ability to make sense of, and something that we should not do in the sense of the social norm and maybe the guidelines I pursue. But the actual disgust that we experience is a physiological response, and it can even be triggered not only by what we might see that isn't direct contact touch, but yet in our environment immediately, but also by the recall and the memory, the remembrance, the imagination, the imaginal recall of that thing that we may consider, in quotes, disgusting. So that can be considered a sort of pain because the body, because of the compelling nature of the memory, responds as if it is. Not unlike post-traumatic stress disorder, wherever we may have post-traumatic stress recall of an event, a traumatic event, or seeing something traumatic happen to somebody else, and that can cause us to wince in the sense that our body will respond, our heart rate may go up, and we may go into fight flight. So along these lines, just based on a thought, that means that thoughts are rather powerful. I know that I pick at subjective things on purpose, and I do this because we have to separate this to be able to make better sense of self-control and self-regulation of physiological things, but also knowing when to use those subjective tools and way of looking at things to help quell, monitor, or even change what it is that I'm feeling physiologically before they get out of control. So it can be a double-edged sword. So in the vein that we're within today, paying attention to the strength of those responses is probably what I want us to focus on. So the next thing is, so pain is a signal. So if we see something that may be uncomfortable to us, that is painful to behold, traumatic to us, shocking, even frightening, not unlike the horror movies we pay good money for to get ourselves scared out of our wits, even just for a little bit, so we can experience that fright and novelty. Those are the things that are existing in our minds after the fact as a memory and can be very painful to pull up. If there's something that has to do with the social discomfort and we know that there are going to be emotions associated with it that we don't want to remember, that can be enough to avoid said thinking or thought process or memory or recall or even talking about those things such that maybe in our home we prohibit talk about a certain topic or talk about certain things or people, or maybe even the bringing up of an event, even if it's done in a joking sense, because it can become very uncomfortable, even embarrassing. Now, the self-regulatory skill that I'm going to point out at least right now, having to do with the mental part of pain, is that whenever we think and our body is compelled to respond physically, now we have a physical response that we can physically effect. The beginning of this conversation was relax into pain. Pain will cause us to draw up and protect ourselves. Often, if we're expecting to get hit, expecting to be struck in space, animals will do the same thing. They will tense up and ball up and turn into this little fetal configuration that we do as well whenever we crunch up and try to hide and protect our head. It's a very reflexive thing. Those are some very spinal reflex-oriented responses that have to do with protection of our head, because once that's broken, the rest of us, well, it doesn't work so well. So what does this have to do with conception of pain and avoidance of pain and relaxing into pain? Well, if the thought of pain is enough to cause you to physically respond, learning how to relax into pain or expected pain has a lot to do with changing the physiology first, not the thought first, because the thought may be too fast and then we have to respond. But if we know or hear something that we know is uncomfortable, or see something or remember something that's uncomfortable, not allowing the body to run off willy-nilly doing what it wants too fast, because if it goes too far at some point, you're going to have to wait for the state or the emotional anger, upset to slow down and the heart rate to go down before you can start reasoning and doing something that is strategically safer or more effective for you. So relaxing into pain starts by learning how to discipline yourself, not imposing discipline on someone else, but disciplining oneself to gain skill so that you teach the body not to react in a knee-jerk, tense reaction. Because not everything that we experience in life requires that we tense up and turn into an armadillo and shell our back and roll into a little ball. There are things that we're going to hear that are uncomfortable, but they're not going to harm your body. There are things that we're going to see that happen outside of us that aren't going to harm us, but may frighten us a little bit. But also, if we tense up with everything, then we are sometimes over-responding and conditioning ourselves to respond to everything, and then it generalizes to everything in the truest sense, and then we start seeing things that look like anxiety and panic disorders, and that everything is startling, and our startle response is hypersensitive, which means I'm always running around jumping and bumping into things, and now I start avoiding places, people, and things because I just can't control what's going out there. And then there is an assumed belief that the world is a dangerous place, and I need to stay away from it as often as possible. And now I wind up spending more money to get DoorDash or have groceries delivered because I just refuse to be out in public because it's anxiety-inducing. When in actuality, we're allowing ourselves to be conditioned to that or maybe even take part in that unknowingly. And this is what we're going to try to relate to today. So here's how to develop the physical skill of relaxing into pain that's very easy to do. If you have someone to train martial arts with, like Tai Chi, I've done for a number of years, people tend to denigrate it as not a good fighting art. It is a good fighting art if you learn from somebody who knows what they're doing. But it's all done in a very relaxed fashion. Doing things like Qigong and yoga teach you how to stretch and lengthen the muscle versus tighten and contract. So on the eccentric contraction, this is where we see the tension that we call protective whenever things get very suddenly scary or surprising. It's the eccentric on the way out when we straighten out and where we can allow our abdomen to actually relax and breathe deeply that we can manage what's going on. Part of the relaxation effect that we're going to talk about is going to hinge upon this one tool we talked about several podcasts back, and that is no matter what happens, don't gasp and suck wind, and then you wake up the sympathetic nervous system, body heats up, and now you're beginning to prepare for fight and flight. Instead, whenever something occurs that you're not aware of, make sure that your feet are flat on the ground to the best of your ability, and also you want to blow out, almost like a sigh, versus a gasp. This will allow your body to stay calm, and allow your mind to stay calm and perceive what is actually happening, versus giving it an opinion of this is scary, this is dangerous, and then responding in kind by overreacting, over-responding, and then dealing with the embarrassment of anxiety or panic because maybe we overreacted to something that might have been a surprise, might have been sudden, but may not have been dangerous to you. So it helps us prevent these kind of events. Now, the next part that we're going to discuss in relaxing into pain might require a partner. And one of the things that we used to do is whenever we're training in martial art, wasn't to see who could endure more pain, but rather trying to keep the social mind from overreacting and the ego from jumping and saying, oh, this hurts me. This hurts me. I need to stop. Sometimes there are going to be discomforts, and people that have played sports know how to go through being exhausted, go through feeling like you can't breathe enough, wherever your muscles are tired and exhausted, being able to push through that. These are all very viable and useful reference tools to apply to relaxing into pain. Sometimes relaxation is one of the best things we can do. If you ever have gotten an injection at the doctor and they tell you not to tense up, well, there's a reason. The more tense you are, the more that muscle is going to actually squeeze on those nerves that you're getting the injection site around. And it will make it hurt more. And chances are you may bleed more as a result. But on top of that, whenever we have discomfort, one of the first things to do is breathe out. The next thing to do is try to relax the body versus allowing yourself to tense. Sometimes feeling both your feet rooted on the ground if you're standing or even if you're seated, versus having one foot down but having them both down, it gives you that sense that if you had to get up and run, you could. If you had to get up and move, you could. And you'd be able to have your center up under you, and you'd be able to avert and avoid circumstance and consequence, whichever the deal may be, which means your survivability just went up. And there is definitely a very physical component to that sense of, I made it, I'm still here, I'm above ground sucking wind. So relaxing into pain minimizes pain. Whenever you have had anything, if you have, and I have, had anything like a muscle spasm, that's just a tense muscle. But whenever those muscles, not unlike a cramp, continue to tense, it's whenever it relaxes that the pain subsides, even if there's no damage. So one of the things that the Russian folks actually taught us, Pavel Tsatsulin, who brought the kettlebell to the United States for the most part. It's been here before, but he was the one that's noted for the kettlebell movement and the exercise that the Russians were doing to basically beat the pants off the rest of the world in sports and weightlifting and things of this nature. And that is that relaxation effect and the use of breathing. But above and beyond that, what they were teaching in this relaxation effect was that whenever we're relaxed, we're more effective, more efficient, can stretch further, and we can actually get stronger after the fact, and we can get a more full contraction if we more fully relax. But above that, there is this principle of muscular irradiation that he would teach, that not unlike whenever somebody's trying to hold a pencil out in front of their body with their arms outstretched, see who wins. Those are things you might do in school and that sometimes fraternities do to see who can hold their arm up longer, this sort of thing, while holding a heavy object. But at some point, it's no longer just the arm or the hand, the forearm and the deltoid. Soon enough, the muscles around that muscle start recruiting other muscles because they're exhausting and the attempt is to stabilize. So very much like that, whenever tension occurs enough, understand that our body's not only going to be tensing one little area, but all of it. And if you stay tense long enough, you're going to start recruiting more and more muscle, which means you're going to get more and more tired. And if there is any pain involved, you're going to hurt more because of that very tension versus the relaxation. It's still going to hurt, but it's going to hurt a lot worse if you're really, really tense. So the muscular irradiation thing can work against you whenever there's pain, but can also work for you whenever you want to get stronger and lift more, this sort of thing. But just something to pay attention to that occurs naturally when our body starts exhausting and starts recruiting muscles near that muscle. And then soon enough, the whole of the body starts recruiting the rest of its musculature just to get that one little job done if we're hyper-focused on it, such as holding a candle at arm's distance, this sort of thing. So the next thing that I want to add is more mental exercise, and this is a very rhetorical question that maybe you should apply to yourself and ask yourself, is this painful? And we're not talking about damage to the body. We're not talking about allowing yourself to be hurt and be a hero and not be a Karen, so to speak, but rather paying attention to, well, what is pain? What is it that I'm experiencing? Am I experiencing an emotional reaction, or is it an opinion that I have that's making me expect worse than what's actually happening, such that I'm not seeing things the way they actually are, but rather my reality is that that's scary and the world is a dangerous place. That's my opinion. Now, here's the other part of this self-directed rhetorical question. Is pain an opinion? Not what my opinion of pain is, but is pain an opinion? So if the body is tensing, and it's hurting more, but it relaxes, hurts less. So at the physiological level, is the body having an opinion about that? It doesn't like getting hurt. Our body does not like getting hurt or injured in any way. It wants to preserve itself. So if there is a mind level opinion of pain, or what you're calling pain is an opinion versus the experience of whatever it is that you're experiencing. We're just calling it pain. Let's not call it a wound or injury. But if it is that, what is my opinion of that? There are those that speak of having great clarity during pain, after pain. And of course, they deal with the injury after the fact. But often, the very single-minded signal that we may be carrying on our mind is enough to distract us from what's going on sometimes. Sometimes talk to somebody while they're hurt, helps them get the mind off the pain, and gives them a sense of, I'm not alone. And there is a sense of comfort there. But if you're dealing with what's going on in the mind, that is a thought that is uncomfortable, or thoughts that are uncomfortable, and I start having emotional thoughts about it, and we'll call those opinions, then they get more uncomfortable when I bring them up, especially if I feed those thoughts with more emotion and start tying them and associating with those things with other things that are equally painful. And our brain does a really good job of generally categorizing based on pain. If it's me whenever I hit my foot eating ice cream versus whenever I ran over my toe with a motorcycle, that sort of thing, they're really disparate experiences. But the two things that are common to it are that each one of those events involve pain. So therefore, I need to categorize them together. And sometimes that's how things come up. And then the brain is speaking for our body that's very simplistic, and it only speaks in pictures, but it starts pulling up almost like baby pictures. Remember this, that hurt. Remember that, that hurt. And it becomes this conglomerate thing that becomes a big mess and hard to muddle through, especially if we're trying to get above and beyond these things that may hold us back. Now, that's a lot in a little bit, and I will tell you we're going to shift gears for now, and we're going to get close to closing this podcast. I just wanted to add a couple of things, though, is that pain does occur. Those are real signals in our body. Sometimes we have to understand that there are such things as spinal reflexes, wherever our body will respond before our mind can ever think about things. And then we have those things, those signals split off, and once our conscious mind jumps into it, we start having an opinion about it. And that's where we start getting the social emotional stuff that starts making pain kind of a messy deal. If you fall down and scrape your knee, that sort of thing. Are you being coddled? Are you being encouraged? Are people responding like you're in danger? And then your mirror social response is to have the same face and response that they're giving you. And therefore, now you have a pattern of, I have to behave this way when I'm hurt. So often we have to pay attention to what my models were, what my thoughts are, and what my opinions are of discomfort, of tired, of slow, of sleepy, of hungry, of angry, and those things that I believe I should act like whenever I'm experiencing those states of body. Once again, those are opinions. Sometimes those are learned. And now there are some real things that we respond with reflexively whenever there is injury to the body. And I'm not saying don't experience that. All I'm telling you is that there are better ways whenever it's a social emotional thing or whenever it's a run of the mill pushing myself for the 5K thing. And there are ways that we can change how we respond so we can save our energy for better things, but also we become more resilient. And the more resilient you are in your everyday challenges, the better off you'll be. Now, what I'd like to speak to you about next is the fact that I wound up uploading 7 mini lectures that I did back during COVID time about 2021. And it was actually snowvid here in Texas because we had that historically humongous snowstorm that we never get in West Texas, but here we are, days at a time indoors. And I was trying to be productive, and I made these lectures for some of my students at the time that I couldn't get to because we were isolated due to the really hazardous snow conditions. And they cover topics having to do with what we do in the podcast, having to do with the physiology, also belief structures, things of this nature, but they're actual video lectures. They run about 6 to 9 minutes. They weren't long at all, but I would really like to hear from y'all. If y'all go to YouTube, you could look those up, and they're on the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills YouTube channel. And I'd be happy to have y'all look at those and give me some feedback. Let me know what you think. And once it's home quality, but best substance is what I'm going to tell you, but it'll be something useful that'll help you connect some things that I'm talking about here on this podcast. And that's really about it for today. And I certainly am glad to have had the opportunity to visit with y'all. It's been a little while, and I'm hoping that everybody survived the eclipse. Oh, did you notice that the world continued? And yes, I'm being funny, but I am glad that it did, because I get a chance to speak to you kind folks, and I'm hoping that all of y'all are well. Take care. Walk well.